Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 12 of Junk Rares. Junk Rares is the Magic the Gathering podcast. It's the podcast where me and my co-host here, we're going to talk about some magic stuff. We're going to talk about some magic news. We're going to be talking about some Commander, how to play Commander on a budget, and anything else that we think about.
Like goifs.
Yeah. So buckle up and come along for the best ride of your life.
That seems like, I mean, it's not that I don't believe in us, but that's a heck of a comment there.
I mean, if you really think about it, what really is the best ride of your life? Did you ever really have a good ride? Usually rides are pretty bad.
I mean, I love roller coasters.
I don't, I guess. So I guess.
I mean, I've been on a couple good ones.
I just imagined myself in a car, and I was like,
oh,
these aren't very fun.
I mean, Raging Bull right up at Six Flags is good.
Sure.
Superman is fun.
Yeah.
Down in Disney World, Expedition Everest is fun.
Yeah, well, I just saw on the news that two roller coasters crashed and, like, four people died. So, you know.
What do you mean? Like, two separate roller coasters just, like, malfunctioned and, like, fell off? Or, like, two...
I don't know.
Different... Because I pictured, like, two roller coasters that are, like,
head-on
separate. Like, but that doesn't make any sense.
They T-boned each other.
And somebody really didn't think about shit when they were designing roller coasters.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really see it. It was just... I just saw it and I was like, oh, that's not good. I hope more people don't die. I was going to say, I hope they're okay,
but
they're not. So.
More people don't die. Yep. That's generally a good thing to think.
Yeah. yeah.
By the way, that's Jeff. I'm Tyler.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hey, what's going on? Getting beyond the point of roller coaster deaths, like this is some sort of Final Destination podcast.
What if we die right here on the podcast?
Then I don't think anybody would know, given that I doubt this podcast is going to be put out, considering it's not live and it is pre-recorded.
All right. What if one of us dies? Will you still put it up? Or I'll put it up.
You know what? I'll use this as the evidence in, like, the will meeting with the lawyer. Like, it's being recorded.
Yeah.
If you die, should I put up this podcast?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. Jeffrey Daniels' lawyer, his wishes have been made known. I'll put up the podcast, buddy.
Don't listen to him. He's got a gun. He made me say it.
You ruined it. Not because you think you're funny. What if you do die?
That's okay. Maybe I don't want the listeners to hear my final thoughts about Joyra.
I don't think anybody wants to hear your final thoughts, because it's probably a SpongeBob quote.
I'm ready to get to Random Commander.
That's probably best. We're ready. Nice. Oh. I actually know who he is. Chainer, Dementia Master.
That's a title.
I know, right?
Does he give people dementia, or does he just have dementia really, really badly?
Maybe if he was playing Scrambleverse, he would have dementia.
Oh.
But he can't, because this is mono black.
Sure.
Chainer, Dementia Master. 3BB for a minion legend. I don't wonder if he's been oracled. I feel like he probably has.
I think minion is still a...
He's legendary creature, human minion.
Okay.
Nightmare creatures get +1/+1. So, you know, he's a lord for, like, if you play the card, literally nightmare.
Oh,
granted,
yeah.
There's other cards that are nightmares, but there's specifically the card nightmare.
I always...
Power, love. Toughness, equal number of swamps you control. Flyer. It's a really good card.
I always love the card. It's a nightmare. It's a horse. Oh. So good. So good.
But he also has an activated ability. Black. So triple black. And pay 3 life.
That's triple life.
Oh. Fair. Put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. The creature is black and a nightmare in addition to its other types. And when Chainer Dementia Master leaves the battlefield, you exile all nightmares.
That's really good.
Well, yeah, triple black, like, and 3 life, reanimate anything in any graveyard, and it gets +1/+1 as long as he's on the... Like, as long as you have a way to protect Chainer, for sure.
That is really good.
Oh, for sure. Like, and in black, just making sure you're running, like, kill spells and stuff, and then, like, just reanimate the best stuff. Absolutely. That's very strong. Like, Chainer is an actual viable commander, which we don't often get here on Random Commander. We get things like Braids that are banned. And the absolute opposite of viable.
And Johan.
That was weird. That was a weird day. But yeah, no, for sure. No, he's...
That's a really...
He's solid. Like, you just make sure people, like, have a way to get rid of people's creatures.
You don't even have to tap them or anything. You just...
Oh, no, you can keep doing it. And at instant speed, for sure.
It's not even your graveyard?
No.
Just anything? Oh, my...
Chainer is super solid. As long as you have a way to protect him, like, so you don't lose everything you reanimate.
Yeah.
But, nah, you keep him around, you'll start taking a game over.
And I guess it is good to note that when he leaves play, all the nightmares get exiled, so they won't go back to the graveyard, so you can't recur them again.
Oh, yeah. So it's a one-time thing.
Yeah, so that's the one thing about it, but, I mean, like Tyler said, if you can protect them, that's a really good ability.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think he's awesome.
So do you just, I guess you just play all the biggest and best black stuff? I mean, right?
I don't know if it's necessarily the biggest. Like, I don't know if this is necessarily big black. Like, obviously, you could probably still want to, like, double swamp, so you can do that more often.
Yeah.
But I would almost say you want to take it more the route of... I would want a lot of sack engines, making sure... I'm okay. Killing off my opponent's stuff.
Sure.
I would run a lot of edicts and stuff. Like, just like, oh, like, you're going to sack that. Like, I mean, obviously Plaguewind is probably good. For, like, in Garruk's Wake.
Yeah.
But I'd probably run my fair share of, like, just, like, kill spells.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, sack effects. Now, granted, you definitely want to play a couple big black things because sure. You can recur them. But I think you probably want to spend a little, like, I'd be more okay almost making it, like, mono black control in a sense. And, like, just keep you off all your stuff. And then just, okay, it's my stuff now.
Okay.
That's the way I would take it, sure. At least. Like, because I feel like that's best utilizes his ability in general. Like,
yeah.
Oh. So...
It's really good.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I've heard the name before, just in, like, past lore and stuff like that, and just, like, knowing about, like, older sets and stuff like that. I never knew what he actually did, and that's a really good ability.
He's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, this deck, I mean, like you said, just a control deck that more or less just wins by just having good value out there and just... Killing their things off, taking them, and...
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just... Yep, I'm gonna wreck you. Like, just by playing your graveyard.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I like him. I mean, he's If you're mono black, he's not a bad idea.
I can imagine that just this gets pretty... out of hand, and pretty quickly. I mean, the fact that it's just three black, I mean, granted the 3 life, but when you're starting with 40...
Oh, I mean, it's also one of those scenarios where, like, if someone plays the big dumb creature and makes themselves kind of like, you know, public enemy number one,
mm-hmm.
And then, like, oh, people are already kind of betting together to kill it. Like, say, for instance, you're in some sort of pod game, and someone plays, like, Lord of Extinction. Like, mm-hmm. Power toughness equal to all the cards in all graveyards. Like, it could potentially be huge in a big pod game, like 4 or 5-person pod game.
Yeah.
And everyone's kind of like, oh, well, we can't let them just have, like, a 40-40 or something along, like... So people work together to kill it, or someone kills it, like, oh, hit the graveyard. You're the guy who could be like, and at the end of your turn, I'll reanimate it, and I'll actually get to swing with it. Like,
yeah.
It completely changes, like, the landscape of the game, because people have to be like, oh, like, do we let...
Do we let so-and-so have it,
or do we let the chainer player have it? Like, it puts you in a cool place where people are like, well, you're going to lose. You kind of have to kill it, and then you just bring it back. Like, you get all the best creature cards, assuming they didn't get exiled.
That is... super.
Like, who doesn't want to kill a Consecrated Sphinx and then reanimate a Consecrated Sphinx?
Sure.
And now you're drawing cards. Like, he lets you do all these awesome cards that people that see play and aren't black. You just get to play them, except now they're nightmares and stronger. I'll be the first person to be slapping, like, Greaves and Darksteel Plate on my chainer to make sure he's as resilient as possible.
Yeah. That's a really good... like, I feel like there's something about this card that, like, I'm missing because this seems so good. Like, yeah, he's a 5-drop, but, like...
Well, no, the drawback is definitely the whole... If he gets removed, you can never get that card again because it gets exiled. Like, that's the balancing of this card, but... That's the point of EDH, though. Like, you can start protecting him. He's really good.
Oh, my... Whenever, you know, I apparently just did not do enough research when I decided I wanted to get into EDH, because there are too many commanders that I find that I'm just like, I kind of really want to play that.
That's how I feel about so many different commanders, where I'm just like, ugh. Like, that's why do you think my big thing is just, like, theory crafting decks and I'm never actually building them? Because I just like to live in La La Land and picture some sweet plays. And then I move on with my day.
I still have a couple decks in the queue that I might just have to go build.
Oh, you and me both. Like,
So this week we're gonna be talking. It's Red Blue Week. We're gonna be talking about Joyra, and again, like with most decks we've talked about, just. We managed to sell myself on it, just kind of discussing and going over it. I mean, you guys know that I built Brago and Xenagos and Taysa both. I'm just like, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, Joyra's been on my radar for a long time. Because, mm-hmm. not even for healthy reasons, but I've been wanting to build, like, I guess not a hate deck. Like, I could build a red-black, like, this game's going to be fun for nobody deck. Yeah. I just keep blowing up lands and creatures and all that.
Yeah.
But for the longest time, I've definitely wanted to build a Joyra, like, craziness deck.
Yeah.
Where the entire point of the deck is to just... I want the end game, the end goal of that deck is to never win, is to never lose. It's to make sure people tell stories about the time they were in a commander pod with a Joyra deck.
You're the worst.
And the goal I set for myself was I want the board state to every 2 turns. If you look back 2 turns ago, the entire board is just completely different. Like, that's the point of the deck. Like, I would play Thieves Auction, Scrambleverse, Warp World, Hive Mind, and not even like Hive Mind into packs to like make people like Hive Mind just to play Hive Mind.
Sure.
Like, Teferi's Puzzle Box, Possibility Storm, constantly changing. Like, Teferi's Puzzle Box is where I think you draw a new hand every turn.
Yeah.
Like, if you have 3 cards, when you go to draw, you just put them on the bottom and draw 3 cards, and then draw your card. Yeah. Like, you're constantly just filtering through your deck. But, like, basically, you get to pick, like, the best card in your hand every turn, and you better hope you cast it, because you're not holding on to everything all that long.
You can play Memory Pool. I think that's the one. It's an artifact where when it comes in, everyone mills the top 3. So pretty much what ends up happening is that you play Memory Pool, everyone takes the top 3 of their library, and you throw it in a giant pile. And then whenever anyone casts anything that goes into the pool, and then they get to cast something out of the pool for free, other than the card that just went in it.
I think I know what you're talking about.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember the name. It might be Memory Pool. It might not. It's Pool something.
I don't know.
I'm bad at names. I wanted to get it for my Zedru.
Well, there's also a card. Knowledge Pool.
There we go.
Yeah, whenever a player casts a spell from his or her hand, that player exiles it. If the player does, he or she may cast another card exiled with Knowledge Pool without paying that card's mana cost.
That seems so.
Because it ETBs and imprints, and so everybody exiles the top three cards of their library. So you just pool a bunch of cards together,
mm-hmm.
You cast a card, you don't get it, immediately gets exiled, and then you can cast something else from the pool for free.
Yeah. That seems like a lot of fun.
Oh, well, there's also this cool card that, like every time a card gets played, like people can vote to, like, counter it or something like that.
What?
Yeah, you could just fill this deck with so much just... I always wanted to fill this deck with just crazy things that, like... The whole point of it was to just, like, completely mess with the game and just completely disregard what everybody was doing. Like, I think my favorite cards would definitely be Scrambleverse and Thieves Auction. Yeah. I love the idea of those cards. Like, because Scrambleverse is, for you don't know, it's this hugely expensive spell. But you pick up every permanent on the board. Everything. Artifacts, enchantments, creatures, even land. And then you put it all in this big stack. And that's for the ease of simplicity of explaining it. Let's say there's six people in the pod.
Mm-hmm.
You take the first card on the stack. You roll a six-sided dice. If it lands on four, it goes to player four. And then you go to the second card in the stack. So for every card, you randomly assign it to one of the six players.
So if you want to play Yahtzee for 45 minutes, there you go. You can have a little Yahtzee sub-game.
Exactly.
That sounds awful.
That sounds hilarious. I think my favorite part about it is that it's statistically possible for somebody to get no cards. And yeah. It's statistically possible for one person to get all the cards. Like, the fact that, like, these things are plausible, I think my favorite thing...
Not plausible. It's possible.
Possible.
Not plausible.
I just love thinking of all the different dumb things that could happen. Like, what if I did that, and then you stealth out all the cards? What if everybody got their board back exactly? It's possible.
Then you've wasted your mana for nothing and your turn. That's something Lily would do. I wouldn't expect that out of
I'm not wasting
like
mana or a turn because I'm using Joyra to cast it.
That's still two mana.
Four turns ago.
Yeah, well. Joyra never forgets, damn it.
That seems like all the dumb things that could happen there just make me. I love the idea of everybody randomly now having, like, what do I do with this mana? Like, I'm playing a black deck, and now I have, like, some mountains, some swamps, like...
Yeah.
I got a plains in there. Like, your mana base is completely different. Like, yeah.
That sounds awful if two people have the same kind of, like, card sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
Just, oh my god, that'd be a nightmare.
Like, I'll give you that one, but, like, overall... Or, like, I like Thieves Auction. Same thing, except... You scoop up all the permanents.
Uh-huh.
You set them aside in a pile.
Oh, and everyone picks one, right?
And then you draft them. Like, yeah. Okay, now I'm first. You pick whatever card you want.
And it just goes around in a circle.
Until all the cards have been drafted.
I like that one. That, I think, would be really good.
Thieves Auction, you just draft. And it's like, oh, what's the best card on the board? I pick that one. Like,
yeah.
I love the idea of people drafting other people's cards.
That was definitely one of the first things that I wanted to put in my Zedru deck, which I still plan on building. Because it's just, you play that, you just immediately pick Zedru, so just, you make sure no one else can get it.
I don't know who gets the first pick, though, let me check.
You do.
Starting with you, each player chooses one of the exiled cards and puts onto the battlefield tapped under his or her control. Repeat the process until all cards exiled this way have been chosen.
Yeah. So just, you pick Zedru first, so you make sure that you get them, so no one else is drawing a bunch of cards. And then you just hope that you have a lot of good things out there that other people take. And then you're like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll draw, you know, eight cards, whatever. You know?
That's just so cool.
I don't know why big red cards are always just, we're going to do something dumb. Who cares? But it's going to be dumb.
Or Warp World is fun, too.
Which one is that?
Warp World is where everybody scoops up all their permanents.
Sounds awful already.
And I think you put them on the bottom of your deck.
Yeah.
But then say you had 12 permanents on the field.
Do you just get the top 12, put them into play?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Except instant sorcerers. They have to be permanents.
So you reveal the top
pack. It's oddly specific in that it puts creatures, lands, and artifacts into play first, then enchantments.
That makes sense. So your auras have something to go on.
And I think that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be relevant like
so,
that. But
so you can't get Planeswalkers because that card was printed before Planeswalkers were a thing.
As far as I know, yes.
Because it doesn't stand there. Oh well.
Hose is the person playing, I guess, a Walker like Super Friends deck. But
sweet tech.
But I love the same idea of just like you're gonna have a board, but it's gonna be completely different than the board you thought you had. That's what I want to do with Joyra. That's me personally. That's not what we're going to be recommending to you, our listeners. But that's the Joyra deck Tyler wants to play.
Because we want you guys to have a good deck that can win sometimes.
That was one of the... There's a card that, like, at the beginning of your upkeep, you flip a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And if you win the flip, I think it gets a counter.
Okay.
And if you lose the flip, I think you take one off.
Yeah.
And if it gets to 5, you just win the game.
Oh, Jesus.
So I love the idea of that getting passed around the table. And if at some point somebody manages to flip 5 in a row correctly, then just somebody random will win the game. This deck would literally never care about winning.
That just sounds so awful. I like the idea of a lot of those cards in the Zedru deck where something weird is going to happen, but you're going to be the one coming out on top.
Because you're drawing cards and gaining life. Yeah. Like, I get it, but I don't want to come... I want nothing to go right for anybody.
Don't you care about value?
Not in Joyra.
Jeez.
In Joyra, I care about making sure the world burns. Not even burns. Just that basically, I want the world to be like a toddler with a snow globe. Just constant movement. No end in sight to this blizzard of insanity.
I have never heard of that before, but it actually...
I just kind of made it up.
Oh, okay.
Because I was trying to think of... Well, I was like, okay, I want to compare this to a snow globe constantly getting shooken up.
Sure.
And I was trying to think of what genre of person would shake up a snow globe the most, and I figured a toddler made sense, so
yeah.
It kind of came out.
Sure.
Yeah. It would just, that deck would be a blizzard of insanity, and I would love it.
That I cannot get behind, my friend. What's the one?
I mean, you got behind that Shadowborn Apostle deck we played.
That one was awesome.
We all lost.
I don't care. You were being mean and hating me out that game.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, you were.
That was the Brago Muzio game. You were being mean and hating me out, I would say.
No. No.
I was attacking you because you had islands.
Mm-hmm.
You were the only valid target for my Leviathan.
Sure. That's what they all say.
And do you know why I was hating you out?
Why?
It's because you were the only one who had ways to exile my artifacts, which you kept hating me out.
All I know...
I wouldn't have hated you out if you didn't hate me out.
All I know is that I played something and you were like, hey, we're cool, right? And I was like, yeah, we cool. And then you played something and killed my guy. Or you attacked me.
That was game 2.
I don't care. You were still mad about game 1.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. But game 2, it was Omnath Earl.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when that happened.
I have a bad memory.
Game 1, when you had Brago and I had Muzio, I was just punching you. Because I wanted you to stop flickering your act of authority and exiling my artifacts.
Maybe you should get things that protect your artifacts better, man. You can't.
There's not in mono blue.
You can't leave your artifacts laying around like that.
I can make them indestructible, and against 95% of decks, that's plenty good.
I was trying to teach you a valuable life lesson. I was trying to take your bicycle and break it so you don't leave it.
I was trying to break your life total so you stop exiling my stuff.
Oh.
Trying to teach you a lesson.
That's fair.
And then Earl Omnath. No, I totally, definitely, like, that was super rude of me. You just got first swings, but I was holding up Earl. I had Earl, And Omnath wasn't going to be big enough to punch in. Or they would have traded. I forgot which one it was.
Yeah.
And I just looked at you and I said, do you really want to start this fight? We're in the middle of a pod game. We fight this fight out one-on-one plenty of times. And you're like, fine. And you punched Frank. And then I put a Madcap Skills on a Daybreak Corn on my Earl and I punched it for like 17.
I don't know why I'm even friends with you.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I punched for 15, but...
I don't even know why I'm friends with you.
I mean, it's not like you didn't then consign to dust my soul ring and my two auras, or just the madcap skills so the daybreak would fall off.
Yeah. You deserved it, damn it. Alright. You're the worst. Alright, so... magic news. So, GP Vegas just got done and over with.
Yeah.
I was... upset that I did not get to go. I wasn't... For a while, I was like, you know, it's a GP. I don't really go to any GPs. So I wasn't too upset. And then I got on Twitter, and everyone looked like they were having a super fun time. And I was like, oh, no.
Well, it was Modern Masters sealed until you got deep enough to go draft. That had to have been awesome.
Yeah. And a lot of people were just getting drunk. So that sounds awesome.
I think that's just what happens if you go to Vegas.
That's.
I don't think you need to go to a GP to be in Vegas and get hammered.
Good point. Good point.
I think it was, oh, we're at a GP. Oh, day one's over. Guys, we're also just in Vegas. Look at all the stuff around us.
Yeah. Okay.
We could have went and got drunk after GP Chicago when we went last year, but... we were just in Chicago and we live here. It was not like, we're in Vegas. We're literally a half a minute walk from about 11 different bars and strip clubs and casinos and pretty much any illegal substance we could probably want.
That's a good point.
I think that had way less to do with the GP and way more to do with Vegas.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do cocaine while I play Magic, you know? It's always...
I feel like that's not the right drug to be on. I think maybe a little hasty with your moves then.
Yeah, you know.
Maybe if you're a mono red player, like.
Yeah, strike fast, strike hard, you know.
Cocaine, the Mardu's choice of drug.
Probably, right? I would probably be having heavy use of drugs if there were dragons flying around. If I walked outside and there was just a dragon just flying down my road... breathing lightning everywhere, I'd probably be like, okay.
I mean, I was thinking more like Khan's timeline, Mardu, like, get all coked up and then go on a war raid, just...
Alright, that's fair, too.
Just stampeding across the ground, just like, fucking, just... probably move a little faster, just that was the whole point of the Mardu, was just attacking fast and quick. Mm. Just, here we come!
And I don't think you're allowed to talk about that timeline anymore, though, because that's not real.
But I prefer that timeline.
What timeline?
The right timeline.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I bet you don't. The only good thing to come out of that timeline, I guess, is Ugin being alive.
Yeah.
Other than that, I much preferred Wedge's timeline, Tarkir.
I think just the plane in general is better off with the dragons.
You know, I don't think it is. And no. I think that's why the storyline was good. Because, at like, reading a lot of the Uncharted Realms,
mm-hmm.
I don't get the sense that the plane is any better off. I just think it's different and controlled by new people. I don't really think Tarkir's any better. I just think it's different.
I don't think they're fighting as much. I don't think they're all running around trying to kill each other, fighting for land and goodies and all that nonsense. I think the dragons have pretty much just been like, all right, we each got our areas. Fucking stop fighting.
I disagree, because fucking Kolaghan exists.
Well, yeah.
That's part of the reason why I thought the storyline was very well done, is that it wasn't like, oh, this is the good timeline, this is the bad timeline.
That's fair.
It was, here's this timeline, and here's this timeline. And Sarkhan wants this timeline because X, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's better. In a lot of ways, it's worse. In this world, like, you know, things like the Abzan and their, like, ties to their ancestry are, like, banned. Like, Anna Fenza gets murdered for, like, paying respect to her, like, ancestors. Like,
she didn't obey the rules.
But it's just Dromakaz rules, because, like, you know what I mean? Like, all I'm saying is, like, there are things that were good about it, and they're, like, they took the bad with the good, and Sarkhan was happy, because he just likes dragons. Sarkhan feels about dragons the way I feel about my wolf deck, I feel like. Sarkhan, what are you doing? Guys! Dragons. Yeah. But Sarkhan, these bad things happened. Yeah! But guys... Dragons.
Apparently Sarkhan's just a huge Timmy. I never knew.
I picture Sarkhan like that, like, meme from the Ancient Aliens guys. Just aliens. Except Sarkhan's just, like, dragons.
Yeah, I could see it.
But that's, I thought, why it was compelling. I think that's what made it a good piece of storytelling, is that they didn't just go the easy route of, this is the good one, this is the bad one. They were like, this is what it is now.
It's just very different.
That doesn't mean it's better.
Yeah.
But this is what it is.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully, this ends up being the slightly better, just through the whole multiverse, because hopefully Ugin being alive makes a difference for the better in just people's eyes over the multiverse. And you could argue that makes it the more appealing timeline.
Yeah.
But I still don't know if it's better.
Yeah.
Or at least healthier for Tarkir. Because you have bad things in both scenarios. Yeah. But,
you take the good, you take the bad. And
exactly.
And there you have Tarkir.
And Kiora takes the Bident.
Kiora did take the Bident.
I like that story.
This is true. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in Magic lore.
But, I mean, should we... Before we get too far off GP Vegas, talking about cocaine and Tarkir, and how it relates to Tarkir, before we get too far gone to come back to GP Vegas, I mean, I feel like the only thing worth talking about, like, the thing worth talking about is the whole Pascal Maynard thing, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the storyline? Like,
more or less.
Because I know Pascal's name. I don't know who won the GP.
No.
I know Pascal took third.
Oh, really?
And I know everything about, like, what he did.
Yeah.
I don't know what anybody else drafted. No. I know Pascal was in Red White Double Strikers.
Uh-huh.
I know that he took the foil Goyf.
Mm-hmm. Pack two,
Pack two, pick one.
Yeah, pack two.
I thought you said pack one, pick one. So I know basically everything Pascal did, top eight.
Yeah.
I know that he took third, because I know that if he would have won, because he, in the round of eight, he won.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the round of four, he lost.
Yeah.
But he was ranked higher than the other guy, so he just took third by default. So, I know everything he did. I don't know who won. I don't even remember what the finals were.
Yeah.
Like, and that's probably bad to say, but, like, so for everybody giving him, for all the people that, like, gave him a lot of crap for the pick, and then the people now who, there are people who have defended him, like, I know, like, Brian Keebler and, like, Kai Booty. I don't know how to say his name.
Kai Buddha.
I know he defended him, too. And then there were other people that kind of, like, bashed him. Like, I think the big ones people kept saying were, like, Owen Turtenwald and Reed Duke.
Yeah.
I guess gave him some hate.
Yeah.
But, long story short, I'm going to say now that's the right pick. If not for any other reason, that he's in... I know Pascal, I've looked into him now. I think he's top eighted a couple GPs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's ever been on the Pro Tour. He's only, like, 22. He's our age. Like, he's super young.
Oh.
So I don't think he's been, like, I don't think he's been on the Pro Tour or anything like that yet. Or, like,
yeah.
I don't think he's done anything, like, huge.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say, taking that Foil Goyf, that was the right pick, if not for anything else alone. The amount of sheer publicity he's garnered, he's the big name coming out of GP Vegas, and he didn't even win.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who he is now. Everybody knows that he's an, it's like, up-and-coming pro. Like, I guess he's, like, I guess a lot of more Canadian players know him, 'cause I think he's Canadian. Oh, so okay. I think he's bigger, like, back in, like, his scene. But, like, you could say that anywhere. Like, people, like, a player from California is probably going to be have a more notoriety in the California scene. Or,
sure.
But now, almost every Magic player in the nation knows Pascal Maynard's name coming out of GP Vegas. All because and you know what? You can't put a price tag on that publicity.
Right.
Someone's going to capitalize it. He might sign a deal with somebody now. He might join Team Ultra Pro or I mean, I doubt Channel Fireball, because they're the ones who kind of gave him a lot of the hate.
Sure.
But what if he now joins, like, Team Star City Games, or, like...
Yeah.
It's completely plausible, because now he's got a name, and there's a story associated with him, and it's the stories like that that end up making players memorable, and people like them.
Yeah.
Like... Everyone wants Brian Keebler for, you know, attacking with a giant the Dragon Master. Like, that's the story. Like,
well, also because Brian Keebler is just so sexy.
Yeah, he must handsome man of magic. But I think my two favorite tweets regarding the subject were actually from Brian Keebler, who's probably my favorite pro player. But he had two back-to-back tweets because he was talking about, like, at first he was defending him, and he had a tweet saying, like, he's like, if we're condemning people for picking cards that don't fit their deck, he's like, more people need to be prosecuted than just Pascal. And then he said, guys, in Pro Tour Austin, I rare drafted an Aaron Mesa over a card that was more playable in my draft deck.
Yeah.
And he's just like, so, like, he was being funny about it, but my favorite one is, he sent out a tweet that was just like, maybe this whole thing's a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And Wizards put a foil Goyf in one of the top 8 packs just to see what would happen.
Yep.
And then right after he sent out the tweet that said it was a conspiracy, he sent out another tweet like a half hour later that said, Jet Fuel can't melt foil Goyfs.
Yeah.
Brian Keeb's the type of pro player I want to hang out with. But yeah, I mean, so even if it was the wrong pick, like... Come on, like, well, now publicity alone, like...
He made the point afterwards, I guess, defending the thing. What he said was, at the end of the day, you can look at it like this. Looking at my draft deck, would I pay $500 to, instead of having the Goyf in there, having a card that was more playable? And no, I would not. I would not pay $500
to have Burst Lightning in my deck.
To rather have Burst Lightning. It just was not worth it to him. And which is fair. I mean, whether or not he would have won had he have had that Burst Lightning, we don't know. But he was not going to pay that money to have it in there. And it's so a foil Goyf is worth about $500. He's actually put it up on auction. eBay. Yeah, he put it up on eBay.
Last I saw, it was over $2,000 already.
Yep, over $2,000. I think it's close to like $2,100, and he's giving half of it to charity. So,
and because I mean, arguably, on top of now just being a foil Goyf, like
it's the story.
Now it's the story. Now it's
who doesn't want that in their cube? You know.
Not to mention, that's now like it's now could essentially a piece more or less. I think that's how he's building it, too, like a piece of Magic history. Like, at this point it is, what's Magic history but great, hilarious stories of, like, GPs and Pro Tours gone by and, like, things that people have done. And to be, like, to be the guy who owns that card and be like, yeah, I remember when, like, 2015 at GP Vegas when Pascal Maynard, like, in the big uproar. I have that Goyf in my collection. Yeah. Like,
that's something and you know what? A ton of people are going to want.
And the fact that you can't lie about it because it has the stamp. Mm-hmm. The fact that it has a marking to distinguish it helps. The fact you can actually prove that, yes, this is... Because it's the only foil Goyf ever opened in the top 8 of GP Vegas in 2015. Like, it has a it has a something to make it that you can prove that it's that card.
Yeah.
And that's... It was at $2,000 when I looked at it. In the morning. I don't know what that... Because I looked at it like 2 or 3 hours ago. It could still be higher up now. Like,
yeah.
So I think it's the right pick. Because I think someone even like made the point like... You know, like pro... Sometimes pro players like... You know, people were like, oh, like... I think like Reed Duke or other people like... Oh, like maybe you have a better, more playable card in your draft deck... What if you win and then you get the prize money and then you get an invite to like invitationals or like worlds or like maybe now you're leaving that money on the table all for the money now and it's the gratification of the Goyf. And he was just, and Pascal in his Facebook post was just like, was I thinking, he's like, I have a minute or something, whatever, however long you have. He's like, I didn't think about that. And he's like, do I regret the choice? In that I always, as a Magic player, always try to find the best line and make the best play.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He's like, would I do it again for everything that it's caused and what's come from it? He's just like, every day of my life. And I'm like, that's awesome. And someone even made the point, like, you know what, maybe he got the top eight, and maybe, you know, he's into his packs, and he's like, oh, maybe this isn't too great. Like, he doesn't feel too, like, maybe you pick the Goyf, and you sell the Goyf off to pay for your travel ticket and entry to the next GP.
Yeah.
Maybe that Goyf was worth him getting another chance to qualify. Like, yeah. There's a lot of things you can do with a $500 bill, more or less, being stuffed in your draft pack.
Like, sure. Sure.
Like, what if it was cash? What if you were, like, drafting and you had... what if you are in red-white double strikers and you sift through your pack? Oh, right there at Uncommon Lightning Bolt. Oh, that's solid removal. I could use that. You flick to the back. What? There's a $500 bill between the rare and the last Uncommon. Like...
Yeah. A foil $500 bill.
I don't know about that. Like, just like... Oh, like... What if it's at, like...
Yeah.
Maybe it was just a magic card that said redeem at Wizards for $500. Like, would you pick that card? Like,
yeah.
I totally defend it.
Definitely.
Like, I
get it.
I think 95% of the Magic community is on Pascal's side.
Yeah.
And it's just a couple pro players who apparently are, like, extremely upset with him. And I don't know. That almost upsets me a little bit because I'm just like.
Well.
In the world of Magic pro players, like, yes, I get some of these guys have won a lot of money, or they make their living being able to write for a stream, or, like, but at the end of the day, no one in the Magic community is any sort of, like, millionaire the way, like, a pro athlete, like, from another sport is.
I mean, definitely.
But, how do you not, like, how do you just as a normal human being not be like, yeah, I get it? Like, how can you just be like, you're disgracing the game, or, like, you should, as you're a pro player, or you're an aspiring pro, you should always make the best pick ever. Like, what happens, like, okay, like, so say he picks the Burst Lightning, passes it to his left. What if that guy was in blue-white artifacts? Like,
yeah.
Does he keep passing, like, somebody...
Do you table the foil Goyf?
Yeah, and is Goyf even that great in the Modern Masters format?
No.
There's no fetches, like...
No, it's not.
Like...
At all.
That card is the money mythic that's really not all that fantastic and limited.
Yeah.
If we're really talking about, like, if everyone was drafting true to their colors and their deck strategy, that Goyf would have wheeled around the table back to Pascal.
Yeah.
But that never would have happened.
No.
One of those next seven people would have been in the same situation. This is a foil Tarmogoyf. It's worth $500. So what did the pro players want? Do they want, say it gets to the guy, say it wheels around, say four people pass on
it. Just
it.
Like 13th pick. Like,
it gets to the fifth person. Let's say it doesn't wheel. Let's say four people pass, it gets to the fifth person, and the fifth person is in black, blue, something.
Sure.
And there's just no black, blue cards in the thing. And there's literally not a single card in that pack left that's playable in his deck. So then that's the first person that's okay, like, oh. So say there's a... So if I'm in a draft, and I'm in green, blue, or something, and I get past a pack that has no cards in my colors, as a drafter, I'm probably going to take the one card I want from my collection, or the money card, but, like, that's the only time it's okay, then? Yeah. Like, it has to get to that situation? And so that guy then Luxacks his way into a foil Tarmogoyf, like... Let's be realistic. That was never going to happen. So the people that are getting all up in arms about it, like, I'd like to see all the people who made those comments be in this scenario. Like, I didn't see these guys in the top eight.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys, like, talking this way and being upset, they weren't in the top eight. If you were in the top eight, who's to say you wouldn't have made the same exact decision?
I think what a lot of people are upset about is the fact...
If you want to be in the scenario to make that pick, then you make it to the top eight.
I think the big thing is that it shows some of the flaws of the game, that even at the top eight of the biggest GP that's ever happened, people are still rare drafting instead of trying to make their deck better. And I think that is one of the flaws of the game.
I think there's a big difference between Pascal Maynard opening that pack and seeing the rare is Vendilion Click worth like $50, or even a normal Goyf worth $160.
Yeah.
versus opening that pack and literally seeing the most valuable card that could possibly be there, and the only card more valuable than it, the next most valuable card is probably like the foil Vendilion Click, and that's about as much as a normal Tarmogoyf. So the next most valuable card in the set is the non-foil version of that same card, and it's a multi, like, for one foil Tarmogoyf, you could get, like, probably a playset of normal ones at 160. The foil Tarmogoyf is worth like 500.
Yeah.
One, two. So you're short by a little bit, but you can turn that foil into three of that same card. Like, that's a complete difference. Like, it's not like he was rare drafting, like, okay, I'm going to take this Goyf. The next pack got, like, oh, like, he got a, he saw a Daybreak Cornet, but that didn't fit his deck. It's a $15, $20 card.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he was sitting there literally rare drafting with no semblance of what his deck was trying to do.
Yeah.
He got past some cards that were upwards of 10. There was a Remand at one point. Like, yeah. That's an $8 to $10 card. Like, he didn't pick the Remand. Like,
yeah.
He picked, like, it's a difference when, between rare drafting and, holy shit, this is a foil Tarmogoyf with the GP Vegas stamp. Even if he did want that Burst Lightning, I liked the commentary team that was talking about it right when they saw it. If nothing else, how cool would it be to frame that as a souvenir from the time you top-8ed a GP? Because yeah. It's got the stamp, it's a foil Tarmogoyf. Like, even if you didn't win, and you don't take, like, I would take it without intention of selling it. Like, this is actually just a really cool souvenir. Like, this is the time I top-8ed GP Vegas. Like,
yeah.
Look at this. Like, this is what I walked away with from it. Like, even though I didn't win, like...
Yeah.
And is a one of Burst Lightning going to win you GP Vegas? Maybe. Maybe that would have happened. Maybe he would have had it at all the right times and cast it at all the perfect moments to remove all the right creatures for him to win. But that's so unlikely. Like, it's just very upsetting to see some people's reaction when I think a lot of these people would have done the same thing in the same scenario.
Yeah.
At least that's my opinion. I could be wrong. Maybe Reed Duke does take that Burst Lightning, but yeah. I don't know. I'm not convinced, yeah. Is what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah, that Reed Duke fella, he's a shady motherfucker.
I mean, I don't even know about that. Like, no. And a lot of, for the most part, I really like Reed Duke. He seems like a really good guy. Yeah. So, in all honesty, I was kind of disappointed to see the comments he made, because it seemed out of character for him, because he's a pro player I like, but...
I think we've talked about Goyf Gate for too long.
Probably. I definitely agree that it's probably time for a little Commander's Corner.
Yeah. Sure.
Joyra, play Scramble vs. Warp World. Nope. See you next week.
Nope.
Come on.
No.
I think that was the best advice we've given ever on this podcast.
No. If you want to play some good cards, well, first and foremost, we'll start off by letting you know what Joyra does.
That's probably a good
place to start. Yeah. So, Joyra of the Gitu. Never been able to pronounce.
Gitu? Joyra of the Gitu? Gaitu?
Gitu.
Joyra of the Gitu? See, they should really publish the pronunciation guides.
Yeah, we come back to this every week. Okay. Joyra, she is one blue red, and she is a 2/2. Legendary creature, human wizard. So she has...
You're a wizard, Joyra.
God damn it. So she has the ability, two colorless, and exile a non-land card from your hand. You put four time counters on the exiled card, and if it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. And what suspend is at the beginning of your upkeep, you remove a time counter from it, and then when that card has zero time counters, it comes into play, and if it's a creature, it has haste. So...
Booyah!
Yeah. 3-drop, 2/2. You can just pay 2 colorless. You don't even need to tap her or anything like that. You can activate it as many times as you want. You can just throw whatever card you want in your hand on the side of the field, and then in 4 turns, you get it. That is... That can be extremely, extremely powerful, just depending on what exactly you're packing in this deck. And that's what we're here for, because we're going to tell you some awesome things to put in there that you might not know about.
Because everybody likes big, crazy stuff for two colorless mana.
If you want to Scrambleverse and Warp World, you can have them both for four mana and four turns. But I would suggest not playing those cards.
I would just do both of them on turn four with my four mana.
Sure.
First, I would let Warp World resolve.
Okay.
So everybody, so we would be Scrambleversing. Mm-hmm. We don't know what. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you let because Warp World, everybody, you know, resets their board based on what's in their deck.
Yeah.
But then Scrambleverse passes it around randomly.
Sure.
I like the idea of both of them happening at the same time. So everything on the field isn't going to be here anymore. There's going to be a bunch of new stuff on the field. And then we're going to randomly give it. Like, that is the ultimate board mix up. Like, everything here.
I hate you.
Is going to be gone. And then we're going to replace it with just random stuff from people's decks, and it may what you get may not even be yours.
I hate you.
That would be the ultimate way to reset a game. I don't even know what you'd be playing at that point. Like,
I mean, I'm assuming turn four, you're going to be flipping over, like, five cards from your deck. It's probably not going to be...
No, but I'm on turn four, so I'm spending them, so it happens turn eight.
Turn eight, okay. Sure.
I feel still like no. People might just freeze the game. I feel like everyone would just be scared to play anything.
Yeah.
That's me. Like, that should be four quick turns of everybody being like, I pass.
Yeah.
I pass. I pass.
I like quadruple time walk. You know, that's fun. So we were taking a look at this deck and we decided to kind of break it down two ways. You're going to have all the cards that kind of care about, like, time counters or any sort of, like, time shenanigans. And then you're going to have the giant cards that cost, like, 11 mana that you're going to play for 2 mana. Because, you know, that's much, much cheaper. I actually think this ability is really cool. Because if you look at the art of Joyra, she looks like she's, like, 17. She looks extremely young. But she's actually, like, hundreds of years old. And it's not because she's a planeswalker or anything.
I was going to say, is it because she just, you know, controls time?
Kind of. Yes. This was back... So, Joyra was in the story back when the Phyrexians were first invading. And there were planes spliced on top of planes. And there were giant slow fields and giant fast fields everywhere, which is actually really awesome. I don't know if you know that about the story. When the Phyrexians were invading, they were caught in a fast time field, so they were just gathering their army so quickly. But, like, I think it was Talaria was caught in...
There was a bubble over,
yeah,
basically,
time
moved quicker?
Yeah, there were bubbles where times moved quicker and bubbles where times moved slower. And I think it was Talaria. Maybe it was just another part of Dominaria, but... They were caught in a slow field, and the Phyrexians were caught in a fast field. So the Phyrexians were just quickly building as they were just sitting there in slow motion, like, oh, fuck.
Oh, no. The Phyrexian oil.
Yeah. But Joyra, she...
See, I was like, okay, so, like, how does the fields work, though? So, like, say I'm standing... Say I'm not in one of those fields.
Okay.
Like, to the people inside the field, is time moving normally?
Yes.
But then people outside the field, they're moving slower, faster?
Yes.
Okay. That's kind of a weird, like, double-edged sword, though, because, like, in the fast field, you're technically aging quicker.
Yes.
You're not necessarily getting anything done. Now, granted, it worked in the favor of the Phyrexians, because... They just went about their life as normal and then grew their army, but then to everyone else, it seemed like they, like, burst into being.
Yeah.
But I get, like, because Talaria West, was that, like, a school or, like, a recent, like, what is Talaria? Like, because it's a blue card, right? Like, I imagine, like, they do, like, blue science-y stuff. And I could totally understand. Like, I feel like the is it would probably be preferred to be in a slow time bubble, because if time is still moving normally to them, that lets them do more research.
Yeah.
Like, say you could do a year's worth of research, but then you, like, exit the bubble and it's been, like, a week. Like, granted, you've now aged. You're kind of sacrificing your own aging.
Yeah.
But like, so the people in the fast time bubble, it's almost like they're moving forward in time, and, like, time's moving around you in the slow time bubble, but you could still get things done, like,
yeah.
And I, from, like, the point of, like, someone wanting to, like, do things in the name of science, that could seem, like, helpful.
Well, and if you wanted to do that, I feel like they would want to be in the fast time bubble, because if they're in a slow time bubble, a year's gone by, but they've only been able to tinker with, like, one thing.
Well, no.
But time's already, I mean, passed them by a bunch.
No, because if you're in the bubble of time,
mm-hmm.
where time is moving slower,
you're gonna die. In you know, if you have a lifespan of 80 years, you're gonna die before you get done with any sort of project.
Well, no, because but say 60 years goes by in the time bubble, and then you exit the time bubble, and only 10 years have gone by for real in the real world.
Yeah.
But you've done 60 years. So, assuming you're thinking about the greater good, and you're like, I need to design this medicine or something, but it's going to take a lifetime of research, but say, like, a plague is happening and you want it as quick as possible.
Yeah.
You could spend 20 years working on this medicine, and then you exit the bubble and it's been 2 years. That's only 2 years the plague got to spread to normal people, but you spent 20 years working on a medicine. So,
but,
I guess...
But that would have to be in the fast time bubble.
No, because time's moving slower to... So if time's moving normally for you...
Right. But time's moving normally for you. But say a day passes in the real world, but in the hyperbolic time chamber, you've had a year to train because everything's moving so fast.
It's moving slower.
No.
Time is moving slower.
Time shenanigans. No. Because you would have had...
Time's moving slower.
No, because you've lived 365 days in one day. Time's moving faster. Time shenanigans is really weird, guys.
I'm so confused. I think we think the same things, but we're not sure which is fast and which is slow. Either way, Tolarian West was moving too slow, and the Phyrexians moves too quickly. Yeah. Let's move forward. This is getting, like, too, like, we need to, like, call Neil deGrasse Tyson or something to explain time distortions to us.
Yeah. But anyway, the reason why Joy looks really young, I guess she found, like, a pool of slow water or something.
She found the fountain of youth, technically.
She found some water that was, like, caught in the slow field, and she was able to, like, assemble some contraption that, like, extracted that. So when she drank it, she would appear as though she hasn't aged. I don't understand how that works.
You totally just told me that she found the fountain of youth, but magic was just like, let's make sure she does some, like, magic tinkering to it so we're not just stealing the idea of the fountain of youth.
More or less.
She traveled to Florida with the Spaniards and she found the fountain of youth. Yay for you, Joyra. Maybe that's why they never actually found it.
Sure.
Maybe she stole it. Maybe she planeswalked to Earth, took it, and then left.
Not a planeswalker.
Maybe she built something.
Sure.
Maybe she used her fast time bubble and the plane, maybe like the planes, like, you know, I don't even know what I'm going with this. I have no basis for what I'm trying to say.
You got to hop in the time bubble, go 88 miles an hour. Anyway, so.
Thanks, Doc.
This Joyra deck, you're going to want to be playing a lot of just super powerful things, but you're going to be playing them super cheap.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally, there's some really cool stuff that is very powerful for very cheap, and, I don't know, what should we get it kicked off with? I like Detrivor, or however you pronounce that.
Detrivor?
Yeah, I got no idea. Detrivor, Detriatavor, either way, moving on from how to pronounce it, at least say what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Do we even, like, mention casting costs of these cards? Like,
I guess we can, but you guys...
The point is you should spend them. Like, yeah. That's the point of the shenanigans. But, okay, so he's 2 red-red, but hopefully that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
He's star-star, and his power toughness are equal to the number of non-basic land cards in your opponent's graveyards.
How are you supposed to get non-basic land cards in your opponent's graveyards?
Well, here you. When you suspend him, he has a special ability.
Oh.
Whenever a time counter is removed from
him,
it's suspended, you destroy target non-basic land.
Okay.
So if you use Jahoira to suspend him for 4, you're going to blow up 4 non-basics, and then you're going to get a 4-4 with haste out of it.
Yeah.
Or, but you also just, you know, blew up 4 lands of your opponent's.
I think that's the more important part.
Yeah.
Blowing up 4 lands for 2 is really, really good.
Because we all know Lily's mana base is a little too greedy to try and make her wedge work. So you better punish her for getting a little too fresh with all those non-basics.
Yeah. Fuck Lily.
We're going to, like, eventually someone's going to tweet at us, like, named Lily. Like, why do you guys hate me so much? Like, or, like, why is it a female name that you keep, like, this is going to get us in, like...
What if Lily's a boy, you know? We never specify.
Like Panther Lily from Fairy Tail, who's a giant panther, and he's male. Yeah, you don't understand that reference at all. Like, it's one thing when I reference, like, popular movies and you don't get it, but that was definitely...
I was never going to understand.
That was a closet case reference that I'm not even sure our listeners will get.
That's fair. So similar, in the same cycle as Deteriorator Man, we have Aeon Chronicler.
Yep.
3 blue-blue, but again, irrelevant. He's a star-star. His power and toughness is equal to the number of cards in your hand, and much like his red friend... Whenever a time counter is removed from Aeon Chronicler while it's exiled, you draw a card.
I really like the idea of paying 2 colorless and drawing 4 cards over the course of my turn. An extra card for 4 turns. Like, 2 mana, 4 cards. That's dumb.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
One mana, 3 cards is banned. So, yeah. You know.
So, but you get those all at once, which is probably a little better. But still, fair. Like,
yeah.
For 2 colorless mana, getting, like... An extra draw mm-hmm. every turn,
mm-hmm.
Every one of your turns.
Mm-hmm.
That's solid,
yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah. So real quick, just big creatures you're gonna want to play in this: Artisan of Kozilek, Pathraiser of Ulamog, and Hand of Imrakul. They're all like 1,000,000 drops, but they're all like. So
those are all the Eldrazi sub $5, more or less.
They're all like a dollar.
Yeah.
So
but, I mean,
obviously the two Titans are going to be the best, but they're extremely expensive.
Yeah.
But these things, they're all like 10 drops. They're all like 9/9s or 7/7s or 10/9s, and they all have Annihilator, which is
so
awesome.
And I think the big part is still the haste. Like,
yes,
you're paying less for them. Probably getting, depending if they're on when they are, when you get them in your hand, like, mm-hmm. they're potentially coming in sooner than you could play them normally.
Most definitely.
And then they get to attack right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big thing that makes them even scarier in a Joyra deck. In Eldrazi, attacking right away, instead of giving your opponents a turn to be like,
sorcery, speed removal.
Let's get rid of that. So, yeah, that's super powerful and super awesome.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend putting anything with Annihilator that's under $5 into your deck.
Yeah. I mean, just any sort of, like, you know, people always talk about how the Titans are the best, and obviously they are. They're, like, mythics for reasons, but, you know, just... There are so many other Eldrazis that people just forget about, and it's like they're all still really good. Like, not being able to be blocked unless you block it with 3 creatures. When you cast it, you get a creature from your graveyard onto the battlefield. Like, they're all really good abilities.
Oh, yeah.
But people just, like, completely forget about them. And it's like Annihilator itself is just such a great thing. Even Annihilator 1. Like, just having that
just
big of a body.
Sack effect, yeah.
Yeah. So, definitely throw those in.
It's definitely very powerful.
Similar to that, if you just want a giant guy, Tyler does not agree with me on this choice.
I don't.
Greater Gargadon. he's a 10 drop, 9/7, and he's a beast. He himself has suspend 10 for a single red mana. But that's awful. Don't do that. If you could just suspend him for 4 turns with 2 mana. And he also has the ability, you can sacrifice an artifact, creature, or land to remove a time counter from him. So, if you suspend 4,
and then you just want to get rid of a couple things to have a 9-7 with haste, that's okay.
I disagree, but okay.
It doesn't have to be huge and flashy.
I prefer awesome. Tidespout Tyrant.
I bet you do, but you're dumb.
It's a 7 drop, 5-5 flyer.
It's an 8 drop.
Oh, you're right. But whenever you play a spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand. That seems way more awesome.
Okay.
I'm going to cast this thing and also bounce that thing to your hand.
But it's
like
not,
your land.
But it's not the Greater Gargadon.
No. And I'm glad it's not, if we're being honest.
Okay.
But, I mean, like, I guess, I mean, I think you guys get the point. Like, if you have something big and blue or big and red or big and flashy that you always thought to yourself, how am I ever going to, like, I want this.
Yeah.
But how am I going to cast this? Joy was kind of the way to go. Mm-hmm. Like, just take your humongous, random blue junk rare, slam it in, get it early, and smack with haste. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the plan on a budget Joyra. Like, just like, I'm going to get these things out. And then the thing is, though, like, you can take your turn 4, turn 5, and if you can suspend 2 or 3 of these things,
mm-hmm.
they're all going to come in at the same time. Like,
yeah.
And that's what makes it crazy, is that, like, you're going to, like, the potential to get, like, multiple 8 or 9 drops with haste on the same turn is really what I think sets it over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we said, like, definitely you can use your own flair and creativity for what creatures you decide. I think the more relevant cards, I guess, to talk about are the things that are going to make it work even faster.
Yeah.
Because, like, honestly, the Chronicle and Dutchavor and stuff, like, things that kind of make use of the time counters are definitely one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, really, if you got something big and silly and smash his face, you can't really go wrong putting it in. And so let's talk about some of the more, like, time counter shenanigans. I think that's where she's going to start shining even more.
And I think these cards, in addition to just getting your big things out faster, I think one thing that's going to kind of really matter when you're playing this deck is you don't want to have too many threats all suspended at one time. If you have a way to defend yourself, and if you're going to be dropping in 3 giant things and just immediately taking over the game, that's fine. But if you're not in that position, don't make yourself look like too much of a threat. You know, if you want to suspend one thing and then play a card to, you know, remove some time counters and then suspend something else next turn, I wouldn't have too many bullets in the barrel and not be shooting them. And by them, I mean your opponents.
Or you could even just, like, faint people out. Like, if you're holding some of these things that play around with time counters,
mm-hmm.
you could, like, have one thing suspended, let it tick kind of low, and then kind of last second suspend something else and play one of these things that plays around with suspend. So then you're kind of putting more mana into it.
Yeah.
But now you're kind of taking somebody by surprise with more than they were expecting.
Yeah.
Like, so some of these shenanigans are definitely kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll jump right into it. We'll start it off with Fury Charm.
I actually really like this card.
Yeah.
It is. I just
good.
Like...
All the charms are always really good.
There are some charms that I'm definitely not a huge fan of.
That's true.
But Fury Charm in this deck gives you a lot of value that I actually really like.
Yeah.
It's
1 in a red for an instant. And you choose one. You can destroy target artifact,
which could absolutely be relevant. That could, I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up what you end up doing with it 50% of the time.
Because
sometimes that could just be obnoxiously relevant.
Yeah.
Like having, granted, disenchant hits artifacts or enchantments, but red doesn't really get enchantment hate. So 1 in a red, like for destroying an artifact, that's kind of the going rate.
Mm-hmm. Or target creature gets +1/+1 and gains trample until end of turn. that could end up being really relevant.
You know what? Trample. Like, you've got all these big fatties. Like, maybe if they don't have flying or you want someone to get through, being able to surprise somebody with a little bit of trample damage is not to be underestimated either.
And I think the main reason you're probably throwing it in your Joyra deck above any other deck, you can remove two time counters from something. So, you know, you spend the two mana, put it on a four-turn clock, spend two more mana, you're just shoring up that clock two turns. Eldrazi will take someone by surprise two turns early.
I could just imagine. Like, could you even, like, figure, like, okay, you're playing Joyra because you can do her instant abilities, you're holding up two or three mana for counter mana, counter magic in case something dumb happens. Nothing dumb happens. End of their turn. Spend the two colorless. Suspend an Eldrazi. Goes down to three. And then you're holding up counter mana again. Oh, no one did anything dumb. Instant speed, Fury Charm, remove two time counters.
On your upkeep.
Your upkeep, the last one comes off. Now you got a hasty Eldrazi. Like, you spent four mana for a haste Eldrazi, and for those two go-arounds, you were holding up counter magic. That's awesome. Like, Fury Charm gives you that kind of utility, and that's awesome.
Yeah. Similar to that, we have Rift Elemental, which is just bonkers. It's a single red. He's a 1-1 Elemental. And he has the ability, you can pay one in a red. You don't have to tap him or anything. Just one in a red, remove a time counter from a permanent you control, and he gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
I mean, that's possibly relevant, but again, it's that same idea. Like,
yeah,
you're potentially, so say you spend one in a red twice to remove two, like,
yeah.
So now you've sunk, say, six mana into this. But again, if you're using it on like seven and plus drops, you're still getting it cheaper, and with haste, like. So, essentially, with Rift Elemental, for any card in your deck, you could potentially spend six mana to give something one time counter, like, and then haste. Like, that's really, really cool.
Yeah. And that's the sort of thing, I definitely see this pitiful little one drop being the target of a lot of removal.
And that could, and that's, like, I mean, that's also potentially, like, six mana to flash something in almost. Like,
yeah.
Say you have that on the field and you're holding like some big 10 drop and you go, okay, two for Joyra, one in a red, one in a red. You just spent four red. It'll only have one time counter. Then you actually hit your upkeep. That one comes off. It has none. It comes in. Like,
yeah.
That and Joyra together is essentially for four red, you can flash in basically anything in your deck.
Yeah.
It's equivalent to that.
It's.
Because you're going to be untapped with a hasty big guy, like, and that's essentially what, like, and you know, Prophet of Crufix is a good card, and people seem to think, so I mean, holding up your counter mana and being able to essentially flash in giant stuff seems solid.
Yeah. More things to just pretty much get you there. Joyra's Time Bug.
I like the Time Bug. I think it's just, I don't know.
She, Joyra actually, she built a toolbox that would fetch her tools for her. I don't think it was this. It's actually, it's an older card.
What if she doesn't have the toolbox with her? What goes and gets the toolbox?
Itself.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, she calls it. It like, it has legs. She just calls it to her, and the toolbox runs to her.
What if it's out of earshot?
Magic. Joyra's Time Bug. It's two colorless. It's a 1/2 artifact creature insect. You can tap it. You choose target permanent you control or suspended card you own. And you can either remove a time counter or put a time counter on it. I think most of the time you'll probably be removing one, but that's not to say all the time you will be. If you have something that you want at a specific time and you don't want it to come in just yet, just sit there and just, all right, you know, put another time counter on it. When your upkeep comes around, just pop it off and just sit there, you know, be able to cast your spells when you want to
cast your spells. I mean, what if you, like, yeah, like maybe you got the Detrivor or the Ann Chronicler.
Yeah, and you just want to sit there and keep drawing cards.
And you've decided, yeah, like, I'd rather keep that. Like, Detrivor, turn your Joyra's Time Bug into essentially tap, destroy target non-basic land.
Yeah.
Or tap, draw a card. Like,
yeah.
You're like, eh, I don't need those cards. from a creature standpoint right now, I like the counters coming off them more. So I'm just going to time bug them and keep doing that stuff. And that's definitely relevant because that sometimes that could be more effective than having just a whatever, whatever creature. Like, no, I'm going to keep blowing up your non-basics, or, oh, no, I'm going to keep drawing an extra card. Like, that ends up being more relevant to me right now.
So, obviously, you know, I think we've pretty much said, you know, Joyra, just spending things for four turns, that's really, really powerful. What would you do if I said, you know, you only had to spend things for two turns?
I would say that's very good.
Yeah? Would you call me crazy?
Sure. You're crazy.
Oh, I'm not. Because the card, Paradox Haze, will pretty much do that for you. It's two and a blue. It's an aura that you enchant a player. And then at the beginning of that player's first upkeep, they get an additional upkeep. So your upkeep will happen. You'll take a time counter off. And then you'll get an additional upkeep. You'll take another time counter off. So...
seems solid.
Yeah. And then on the next turn, the other two you'll will fall it. Off, and it'll have haste. Like, I think that card, more than most, definitely seems like something that you'd want to have. And it's just a lot of stuff like that. I mean, this deck is really just, you're going to be taking people by surprise. They're not going to see anything that's coming, and
I feel like she's the Tony Stark of the Magic world.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily, like, Artificer-tile stuff.
Yeah.
But I just like the idea of her just, like, apparently building a toolbox that follows her around.
Yeah.
And I don't know. She just seems crafty, and I like it.
And it's, with this deck, you're going to be playing a lot of cards, I think, that a lot of people really aren't going to, like, know what they do or, like, really be playing them. Like, not a lot of other decks really care about time counters. All of these cards are going to be super cheap. And my advice for you, with all that money that you're going to be saving, go to your local store and buy as many pair of glasses as you can. Even if you don't wear glasses, I don't care. And if you ever lose the game when you have a bunch of cards suspended, drop those glasses on the floor and just yell, "There was time! There was time!" That's a reference.
But are you referencing actually the Twilight Zone?
Yes.
Or are you referencing all the various spinoffs since?
I like the Twilight Zone.
Have you seen that episode?
Yeah.
Good, because I also love the Twilight Zone.
And I think that's really the best way you could probably lose a game of Magic, if we're being honest.
I think the best way I've ever lost a game of Magic was with, ooh, what you say.
That was also a good one.
All right, guys. I think that'll just about do it for us here at Junk Rares this week.
You can tune in next week when we talk about a black-green commander.
Is that next?
Yes.
I'm actually excited for that. Black-green's another one of those decks that, like, I have yet to... I really like the color combination, just like... just because. Like, yeah. I think about the card, and I see some of the cards, and I'm like, ooh, like, in my head, like, what I think it does. I'm hoping this goes to the same route as Taysa, where, like, I really liked white-black in my head, but never found something to, like, make it work.
And I think that's where I am. I like the idea of the whole,
I love the idea of black-green. But I have yet to actually, like, find something that works the way I like it. I want it to work. So hopefully we find something. Hopefully good things are in the future. But as always, feel free to contact us, criticize us, praise us, whatever you
worship feel us.
We deserve on our social media.
Stalk us, love us, bathe us.
Not that one. Facebook page at MTG Junk Rares. Tweet at us at MTG Junk Rares and or email us at mtgjunkrares@gmail.com.
If you want to give us a phone call. You can call us just type in MTG Junk Rares.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah, and then it'll call us.
Not 555 Junk?
Sure.
You can try that. I feel like that reference went over your head.
Yeah. I get it. I'm not laughing, but I get it.
All right, meatwad. All right, well...
I think that'll just about do it.
Because you know what? I suspended our ability to take over the world. It'll be here in four casts.
All right. All right.
All right, guys. I'm Tyler.
And I'm upset.
Later.